Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, where we'll spork your ass. I'm your host, the very aboriginal Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of The Critic. Who else is here with me today?
Michael Rapars, and I used to dance like this for Kirk Douglas.
Who else?
If childhood trauma turns you on, have I got a story for you. I'm Diana Goodman.
Ooh, stay tuned. And who else?
It's Henry Gilbert. And when's Reagan going to kick off? Am I right?
A little late to the party on that one. And today's episode is Lady Hawk.
Olé, 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 feeling hot, hot, hot.
Today's episode aired on March 19th, 1995, and as always, Henry will tell us what movies were in theaters at this point in history.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! Candyman returns in the much weaker sequel, Farewell to Flesh. Matthew Modine and Paul Reiser deal with divorce in McDonald's in Bye Bye Love. And Halle Berry battles Jessica Lange over a baby in Losing Isaiah.
A Farewell to the Flesh. That's very formal, I think,
yes,
for the Candyman series.
Yeah. They really wanted to. That was a Clive Barker original. He really wanted to make his own kind of Freddy Krueger and replace. It was basically Bloody Mary, except you say Candyman in the dark three times, and then he appears. And he's
Tony Todd pops up and he spits bees at you.
That's right.
And is he related to Dr. Giggles?
No.
Okay.
No.
I thought they went to school together.
He's much more serious than Dr. Giggles. He actually could work as a symbolism of America trying to bury its past of slavery. But meanwhile, Bye Bye Love, I only remember it because it was so product placement-y of McDonald's. It is about modern men living in the divorced world. Like, they're all Matthew Modine, Paul Reiser, and Randy Quaid are these three divorced guys who meet up to drop off their kids and pick up their kids from their parents, and they are, like, living lives as single men. But on top of that, they always meet in a McDonald's, and so they're just like, McDonald's is nice. Hey, McDonald's, cool. And then you find out McDonald's paid a whole lot of money for it to basically be a McDonald's.
I think they have like a kids' party with dancing like in Mac and Me.
I don't think they got a little more subtle after Mac and Me.
I think this was the era of the Arch Deluxe, so they're sending the message like, we have adult sandwiches for adult problems.
Yeah, you adult dads like Matthew Modine, you can be like Matthew Modine and have a burger with your kids.
It's been my dream, Henry.
I like the idea of adult sandwiches. Like, you can't give kids these sandwiches. You will be arrested.
They'll just pass out. There's too much mayonnaise. What was in those Arch Deluxes that made them so adult?
I think just this different sauce.
They're like made with tears of the workers.
They're made with porn.
I think they were more like
instead of sawdust, it's ground up porn.
They should have just wrapped them in porn. You know?
I think they were more like a Whopper. That was at the time where McDonald's made its own Whopper, and then Burger King made its own Big Mac, and they just kind of copied each other. And then Losing Isaiah is about Halle Berry is a drug addicted inner city mother who they take away her child, and then Jessica Lange adopts her. But then Halle Berry wants to fight over. She's like, I got clean. I want Isaiah back. And at the end, they decide they can share him.
I'm a big fan of any movie with a gerund in the title. So I'm there. Chasing Amy, finding Isaiah.
They share him King Solomon style? They cut him in half?
No, she agrees. Cool. They agree they'll both live in Isaiah's.
Watch the director's cut, and you'll see that baby split open. So we rarely comment on the phone or radio joke, but I do want to comment on this one because it is such a obscure reference that I had to go digging. Diana, you sound like you know it. I have a clip to play.
You know, there's a couple different instances where I've seen you the last couple weeks. Like, I'm digging on Twitter. Like, I need to find this somewhere. And I'm like, bitch, I'm right here.
You're on Twitter.
Some of us are old and remember things.
Please
should have
me.
DM'd you, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Next time, at me, Diana.
Yeah.
But what did Faye Dunaway do then?
The gag is, here's a test of Faye Dunaway's voice. This is not the first, but I think the second joke that they have made about Faye Dunaway singing, because she was contracted to star in Andrew Lloyd Webber's new Sunset Boulevard musical. Mm-hmm. And that's great casting. She's perfect.
Yep.
But she's
as Desmond.
As Norma Desmond.
Oh, she is perfect because she is a crazy movie person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
But she is legendarily difficult and not a singer. And so there was lots of fun tabloidy fodder about how fucked up this was. And it was such a super expensive musical. And she's being such a pain in the butt. And they're feuding publicly.
And she can't sing.
And she can't sing. And eventually she was replaced by Glenn Close, which is also great casting.
Yep. Glenn Close was great. I've heard
she
the
just
Glenn
came
Close
back.
One.
And
oh, did she?
They just came back and did it again.
That sounds even amazing. Better. Yeah. Faye Dunaway was going to be in the LA production, which didn't open. They wasted millions of dollars. And then in New York, that's when it opened with Glenn Close. But I have a clip here of Faye Dunaway Dunaway, being her zany self, commenting on what happened on a local news broadcast of the day.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, you're just blaming him for his vicarious...
No, I'm not blaming him for anything. We all make actions and decisions and behave in life because we're a product of who we are and the experiences of our life. I am not saying it's his fault. I'm saying that for whatever his interior... emotional life is, he made decisions that were on the one hand completely supportive. He cast me. He told me as late as Monday night that he was ecstatic that I had come on, that the progress, in his words, the progress was remarkable, and then the next day changed his mind. So he tends to be a capricious man.
So take that, Andrew Lloyd.
I feel bad for that has to be humiliating for Faye Dunaway to be publicly fired for that, but like, don't hire someone who can't really sing for a musical. It's one thing to sing in a movie. They can sweeten it. They can do all that stuff. But you have to – there are few people that can be Broadway stars because you have to be a great singer and you got to do it like 2 times a day sometimes. Like it is not easy.
Yep.
So just because you're a big name star like Faye Dunaway doesn't mean you can sing all that time. That was actually the plot of Spider-Man 3 as well for Mary Jane.
Oh, boy.
It's also the reality of Spider-Man Turn on the Dark.
Also
Turn off the Dark.
Yes, yeah.
No one died in the making of the Sunset Boulevard musical, I think, or was horribly injured.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of train wrecks, this episode was directed by Rich Moore, who's amazing. He's not the train wreck, but it was written by Tom Brady, who, when I looked up what he had done, I got a look into a horrible Happy Madison universe.
Oh, thing. Like, he went into football?
He directed The Hot Chick and Bucky Larson and wrote The Animal. He wrote The Animal first for Rob Schneider, and then they're like, well, this works so good, you're going to write and direct The Hot Chick.
I think he also wrote for The Simpsons, or maybe that's Tim Long, who's also a football-named guy.
Yes, yeah. He did, to my knowledge, he went straight from this to working for Tom Brady, went straight from this to working for Adam Sandler. On the lesser things, like Adam Sandler was like, I ain't going to do this, but you can write for Rob Schneider. And then when Rob Schneider's done, he's like, make the worst movie starring Nick Swarsden ever, Bucky Larson.
I mean, despite that, I think he still sleeps on a pile of money.
Yeah, so, no, you sell your soul to work for Adam Sandler, but you get a lot of money for your soul.
You can buy your way into heaven, I guess. So, yeah, this episode is titled Lady Hawk. I have never seen the movie this title is referencing exactly. Has anyone seen Lady Hawk? Matthew Broderick, Michelle Pfeiffer, 85. Yeah, I think it's a period piece. I was hoping, Diana, you failed me. I thought you'd seen every movie.
I have. Nope, never. I'm not into fantasy, so I've never hit this one.
It has nothing to do with this episode. It's just that it's Jeremy's twin, who was a lady, hence Lady Hawk. So there you go.
You know what I was thinking with this episode? That this is when they decide to officially make Jay and Alice a couple, though they like – the way they portray their relationship in other episodes, that if you play it out of order, you could either see them as a couple or not as a couple.
Yeah, these are all aired out of order pretty much, too. So I forget in which week this one aired, but it's sort of scrambled in terms of the broadcast order.
This was in March, so it was still kind of early in it. But I also think, though, if they had done this a year or two later, they would have gotten them learned. They would have learned from Friends in how they handled a will they, won't they, and made this like the season finale or something instead of doing it in the middle of the season and tease it out longer instead of like, no, look, no will they, won't they. They're not going to do a Sam and Diane thing for it. They're immediately together.
Well, also, they were kissing in the Iraq episode.
Yeah, that's true.
And in the first episode she's in. And later in the series, production and airwise, there is another woman who comes to New York and, you know, threatens to take Jay away from Alice. So they do this plot more than once.
That one is even weirder. It's like, but wait, no, you guys are officially together. Like, it's much worse for him to be tempted on when he's in a relationship instead of in this one where he's kind of clear on like, well, are we? Aren't we? But let's talk about Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so,
but first I was wondering, I don't know what the broadcast order was, but it seems like at least going through this production order that we haven't really had Jeremy yet this season. And then they just sort of like, oh, he's been here the whole time, dummies.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah.
In production order, he had one scene in the first episode in the season premiere.
And frankly, I think they just ran out of Australia jokes. It was just like, that's basically, you were just a vehicle for Australia jokes and putting Yiddish words in a non-Jewish person's mouth.
Well,
and
they should take his genitalia right back there then.
Yes, maybe he did for 6 episodes. Who knows? this episode opens with a very popular target of Al Jean and Mike Reese, Saturday Night Live. And this was basically one of the worst, if not the worst year for the show.
Yeah.
So, Pat, are you a man or a woman?
She's a girl, mate. I saw her backstage. Look.
You ruined my career!
Oh, well.
Live from Hohokus, New Jersey, it's Yesterday Night!
It's Yesterday Night Live, starring the not good enough for feature film players,
ouch,
including the fat guy,
ouch,
crazy woman, and the token black guy,
Tim Meadows,
featuring musical guests, the Rolling Stones. And now, here's your host, Jeremy Hawk. Hello, Hohokus.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
So yeah, that was basically 94-95. And the previous year, too, were some of the worst eras of SNL. Lots of people were leaving. Mike Myers left mid-season 20. Mm-hmm. And they're basically getting, like, pitch hitters like Janine Garofalo, Mark McKinney, Chris Elliott, just to save the show. Even, like, Michael McKean, who was in his 40s,
yeah, that
was on the show then.
It was a really weird time. It was when they had a news story. The cover, I forget which magazine it was, but it was Saturday Night Dead.
Yep.
And yeah.
it really embarrassed the place. Like, Lorne Michaels hated it. Everybody was very unhappy with that time.
Speaking of, I like that the Rolling Stones are drawn as elderly with, like, walkers and stuff.
Yeah.
And this was 22 years ago. And as far as I know, they're all still alive.
Yeah. I think they're still touring.
Yeah.
I think so. But but this is so weird to me in many levels. One, they hate SNL. Like Gene and Reese previously savaged SNL in a very similar way in the Brother from Another Planet episode of The Simpsons in season 4 when Krusty hosted it. And but then also that, like, I thought they were friends with Julia Sweeney, and maybe that's why – like, in case you guys don't know, Dr. Hibbert was originally supposed to be Julia Hibbert because her real name was Hibbert, and they were going to name her after the Julia Sweeney. And so they, because they're friends with her. And then in this, they're like, oh, Pat's not funny, and it's really a girl. See, and that's your career's over. It's really – Julia Sweeney has not been Pat since the Pat movie came out, and she is better than ever. Like, she just does cool one-woman shows. I really like her.
Yeah, no, Pat helped hurt her career. I think cancer destroyed her career.
She had to take some time
off. Big, ugly battle with cancer.
Yeah. That's true.
But also it wasn't just the bad time for it as Saturday Night Dead, but it was also like the frat boy time of it because it was Farley, David Spade, Adam Sandler, and Chris Rock. They were seen as the frat bros who would do more, jocular humor that often involved male rape.
Yeah, I mean, that's
repetitive fucking humor. That's my problem.
Yeah.
That's why Rob Schneider is permanent. He's been dead to me for 20 years.
He's the worst.
More dead. So many sketches where he's the repetitive guy. I would rather watch the big sweaty guy than repetitive Rob Schneider any fucking day.
Well, Rob Schneider didn't even get to be mocked as a character in this. They're like, you're not even worth making.
Yeah, I mean, post
Baby Sandler, come on.
Post death of Chris Farley, this seems a little mean spirited to make fun of Mr. Sweaty Guy. But
at the time, like, that the sketch that they write for Sweaty Guy, it's like you're basically just writing an SNL sketch.
I mean,
it's a bad SNL sketch, but it's basically just the first minute or so of an SNL sketch. You know, we're not getting the successive 10, 12 minutes that would go after that.
I love the tune, the jingle they write for the beginning is so great.
Yeah, let's hear it. I have it.
He's Mr. Sweaty Guy. He sweats like a pig, oh my. When he gets nervous, he explodes. Sweat squirts out like a fire hose. He's Mr. Sweaty Guy.
Mr. Sweaty Guy, this is the original copy of the US Constitution. It's been kept dry for 200 years. I want you to hold it. No sweat!
They do the same sketches every week. They're nothing more than a string of catchphrases. Yeah, that's the ticket.
So yeah, that was the compulsive liar character that John Lovitz played on SNL in the 80s.
I feel like Lovitz wasn't trying extra hard with that.
No,
so, yeah, I kind of wondered why they didn't just roll out like a series of J catchphrases.
Hachi machi, yeah. So about Chris Farley more to go into that. I mean, we mentioned the Chris Farley show. That's the book. That's like the book about
it's
his life
so
and everything.
Good.
And one of the frustrating things about him as a person is he was basically pigeonholed into being the big, fat, screamy, sweaty guy when he was actually a very brilliant comic performer. But that was like an easy button for him to push that would make an audience audience like freak out. And people
and he
like
loved to entertain. Yeah, to go for it.
People like Bob Odenkirk, who worked with him in I think Second City, hated that Chippendale sketch he was in because it's just like this is all he's going to be now is this character.
Well, he should have won. That was a point Odenkirk or I think maybe a different writer made in the book of saying he should have won that Chippendale's contest. Like that would have it turned too mean by having him lose it. Though it is funny how Kevin Nealon says, "Well, you see, you would not win because unlike him, you are fat and overweight." But it's also funny that they say that these are the guys not ready for movies when I would say this class of SNL has made more money at the box office than any cast of SNL. Well, maybe 76 is a little more. Well, you got Eddie Murphy in there. What I'm saying is Chris Farley, Rob Schneider, Adam Sandler, David Spade.
Even Tim Meadows got a movie.
Even Tim Meadows. They made a lot of movies that have made a lot of money. Like, I'm not saying they're good, but they're all good, but yeah.
So yeah, this is where we meet Olivia Newton-Hawke, the previously unknown twin sister of Jeremy Hawke, who, as Diana said, has been missing from season two up until now.
Yeah, that's, I guess, why would he talk about his sister? But he barely talks about it. So, oh, shit, I meant to mention that not only do Gene and Reese make fun of SNL again, they again do Carson. They're just like, Carson. Yeah. Like, Jeremy Hawke should not do a Carson impersonation for any reason. He's like, and now my Carson. Like, really?
Jeremy does a lot of impressions because Maurice LaMarche can do a lot of impressions. So he's been like Bullwinkle and Robin Williams.
Yeah. And Kirk Douglas.
He's been Johnny Carson twice, though, right?
That is true. Yeah.
And to make a Tanya Harding joke, which I can't believe 22 years later, like, people still get that, and there's a movie and everything. Yeah. Why?
There's a new movie, that's right, with Margot Robbie, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did like, though, that the only thing that made it forgivable that they did another Carson joke on the show is that the extra joke was that Marty had no clue who Johnny Carson was.
Yeah.
Well, I was right on the fence of that joke, too, because, like, I had never watched Johnny Carson. I was aware of who he was, but, like, this is pretty dated even for 1995.
Yeah, 1995, yes. It's only a couple of years old, though. Carson went off there in 91, 92?
I think it's two.
Yeah. All right,
put it another way. If you're a teenager in 1995, this is pretty dated.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, we find out that Jeremy's nickname is Wally. He was stolen by Wallabies, luckily not eaten by them.
Yes. We just did The Simpsons, Bart vs. Australia. So we went into the dingo eating the baby. And this is – he was kidnapped but not eaten by a wallaby. But
do you think it put him in his pouch and hopped around?
There's lots of mucus in there.
They're full of mucus and nipples, as I found out.
Yeah, that's where the nipples are.
Yes.
Aww,
so we're teaching.
Wallabies are so cute.
They are very cute.
I love how Jay says, well, if childhood trauma turns you on, which is not what Olivia is saying.
She's not
saying the childhood trauma turns her off.
Why would she be turned on by the trauma of her twin brother?
It's ridiculous.
But I should have messaged Diana about this, but what is this a parody of? It was very hard to Google and I know I've seen it before.
Again, why? I don't know why you're not just messaging me. This is it goes into...
I appreciate you giving me these notes live on the show too.
Okay. All right. It goes into a parody of Jay's childhood trauma as a scene from The Elephant Man.
That's right. Okay. Yes. I thought so.
I knew that one too. I knew that it was you.
Okay. All right, everybody in the comments, vote on which one of us is smartest. We will end this now.
I mean, come on, the guy looks just like Anthony Hopkins. It's a scene from Elephant Man where Anthony Hopkins is a doctor, shows this like staff of medical college the Elephant Man, John Merrick.
Got it.
And
Merrick is nude when he but they're seeing him. You're not seeing his face yet.
Right, we're not seeing his body, but Hopkins starts describing it, and he's sort of there's a pan close up to him and a tear comes out of his face as he realizes, like, oh my God, this poor guy. How does he live like this? Jay's problem, on the other hand, is that he swallowed
the recording of dogs barking jingle bells.
And so the tear rolls down his face as you just hear whoop.
That was pretty good. But they couldn't pay for the real barking dog song. They had to have one of their actors do
it. It's
got to
be a pricey license to buy. So we find out who Olivia is in this next clip.
Oh, baby. Yeah, I can dig it. Oh, anyway, what brings you to New York?
Oh, I'm a dealer in Aborigine art.
How Aboriginal.
We're opening up a gallery here in New York. You know, I've never been here before. Would you like to give me a tour?
Yeah, I'd like to. Oh, but I shouldn't.
Jay has a girlfriend.
Well, she's not my girlfriend, but we have kind of a Harry Met Sally, Tracy and Hepburn, Turner and Hooch thing going.
Hey, look, it's just a tour. It's not like you're going to see me cook naked.
Oh, all right.
Naked schmaked. I just want the cooking.
Dad, there goes Yesterday Night Live alum John Lovitz.
Make way, you comedy peons. Famous movie star coming through, and I am carrying something you've never seen before. It's called talent. Man, I wish I had half his looks.
Well, you kind of sound like him.
You think?
I do like the caricature of John Lovitz. It makes you realize he doesn't look that much like the critic.
Yeah.
Whenever I think of John Lovitz, I think of the critic, but he's a very different looking man.
Mm-hmm. But I like that in that universe, Saturday Night Live does not exist. It is Yesterday Night Live, and Lovitz worked on that, not SNL.
Filmed in Hohokus, New Jersey.
Yeah, going back to that because it's a funny name. It's even funnier written out.
Hohokus and Weehawken.
And that they,
the twin jewels of New Jersey.
And this is a parody, too, of SNL. Famously, they have after parties after every show, and everybody loves the parties, and they all have fun and do drugs. And but Lovitz, the Lovitz character, is exactly Llewellyn Sinclair. As well, like make way, they had him be so big. I love that. And though, man, this time it really disgusted me seeing how much Jay was like literally getting off from hugging her. Like she's comforting him, and he's like jizzing in his pants.
He's super creeping on her through this whole thing. Yeah. Like his first impression should have been terrible.
And I guess they set it up that she was looking for an unattractive man who she can take care of, and that's why. But like, there's no there's multiple times this episode I'm like, how can you love Jay? He's a disgusting monster who eats garbage.
You can ask that of every woman who has fallen in love with Jay over the course of these episodes.
That's true. That's true.
You can ask that of every woman.
Every woman ever.
Hashtag all yes all women.
And then we get a wonderful Tony Curtis's gay joke. They love those ones.
No, it's not a Tony Curtis's gay joke. It's a Tony Curtis's old and unattractive joke.
Well, when he says, I used to dance like this for Kirk Douglas, that's a gay joke.
Yeah, and I believe, I mean, when I was a kid, the main draw of True Lies, like, this middle-aged woman is hot, you guys. Check it out.
Can you believe it? It was MILF before we knew the term.
Yeah, it'll be years before the MILF entered our lexicons.
Yeah, so True Lies 2, now starring Tony Curtis instead of Jamie Lee Curtis. I love the animation on this sort of sexy little dance. It's really, really cute.
Yeah, this is the animation, actually, in both of these episodes we're doing, and then this one and the next one, like, the animation is just awesome. Like, this is some of the best anime. This is probably where they blew their budget and then and had to cut corners and other ones. But like Rich Moore is supervising director of the whole show and directed this one. You know him as the director as well of Wreck-It Ralph and Zootopia, soon to be Zootopia 2. He's an Oscar winner now, actually. Rich Moore.
I forgot about Zootopia. So up next, Doris and Duke are sort of the Greek chorus for this episode.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Poor kids. They're crazy about each other. If only they had the guts to say how they really feel.
You're right, Duke. I've loved you for years. In fact, every 30 seconds I have a hot, steamy fantasy about the two of us.
I got to take this elevator.
It's just an open shaft.
It's quicker.
Very similar to Homer escaping Mindy in The Last Temptation of Homer.
Right, man.
It's like falling down the silo.
Was anyone expecting that to turn into, wait, maybe they're not fantasies, they're hot flashes?
Oh, that would have been a better joke.
She's a bit too old for menopause, though, I think.
Hey, you never know.
You're never too old for menopause.
I also like that they didn't do much more than the joke of hand that rocks the dreidel. Like, they don't need to film it. They don't need anime. Like, it's a cute.
We already had Rabbi P.I.
Yes, yeah.
So this is a very familiar parody coming up because I know our listeners hate / love when we bring this up, and that's Simpsons Did It.
Yep.
So,
Simpsons did do this, though.
In the episode Boy Scouts in the Hood, it opens with Bart and Milhouse singing Springfield, Springfield, after they have their squishy bender. Mm. And this is a very more – not as parodic, but it's more of a lesser look at New York. So let's hear it.
New York, New York!
York, New York!
New York, New York!
New York, New York, a terrible town. The sky is brown and the water is brown. Cabs won't stop, they don't even slow down. New York, New York, it's a terrible town!
He's dead.
He is dead.
Or crippled at the very least.
That cab really sends him flying.
Yeah, that cab hit was so hard. It reminded me of the famous like car hitting scene in Meet Joe Black when nobody can die.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But
so we played this clip before in a Simpsons Talking Simpsons episode, but here it is again. Here's the original New York, New York from the musical later movie On the Town.
New York, New York!
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 Just a bunch of grown men in their pajamas, ready to have fun in New York.
They're seamen, man.
I know.
God damn it, they're on leave.
They're white just like seamen should be.
And yeah, they're going to have a whole – they are on the town for one night of shore leave in beautiful New York.
That movie is so much fun, everybody. You should watch it.
Can I just say, I think it's a little weird how okay Alice seemed to be initially with like, there's no jealousy. Like, yeah, just go have a good time with this beautiful woman who's like twice my height.
She's repressing it a little bit. But yeah, I guess only when I see Lady Hawk as the height differential, like you, I guess you see the like, oh, Alice is, I guess, 5'1 or something, and to Jay's shortness as well. Mm. I suppose she isn't much taller than Jay.
She's very tall and strapping like Jeremy.
Yes. No. I mean, I kind of agree. I think it is his latent homosexual desires for Jeremy.
I'm gay.
I'm sorry. I love this parody. So I mean, the sky is brown and the water is brown is just fun. It's like we're not even rhyming.
But
the point where they're like skipping stones out on the Hudson River and like they hit a fish and the fish starts doing rude Italian gestures at them.
Yeah, I love that.
That's New York to me right there.
It's a very pre-9/11 portrayal of New York, though. I don't think we'd say New York is awful. It's a terrible place. America City.
Yes. Yeah, it's more like a, you know, 70s, 80s, back when New York really, really sucked.
Yeah, well, that was after 9/11. The people who always hated New York and used it as like, oh, that's that hive of scum and villainy. Now they're just like, it's America's town, America. It's as America as anything. Remember when they had like the GOP convention in New York City, which is like, what the fuck?
New York City.
I was worried what the Chinatown joke would be, but it was just a fat joke.
It was just an all-you-can-eat buffet going out of business joke.
Yeah.
Because of Jay?
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, I actually like the sign gag of the Hasidic jeweler. That was cute.
They visit the antihistamine district with Flint City, the gourmet sinus, and FAO schnoz. Mad Magazine.
I thought it was FAO snorts.
Oh, I read schnoz.
I think it's schnoz.
Okay.
Yeah, as someone with chronic sinus problems, I really wish there was an antihistamine district. It would really help me.
That I like that they are a group just like Chinatown. It's a group of people.
Yep.
And one of the Hasidic Jews
is there too. I mean, it's a gathering place for everyone to relate to each other.
It's true. It's a very diverse group of people in need of antihistamines in the antihistamine district. It's almost my line in the show when they visit Ulysses S. Grant. Like the classic Who's in Grant's Tomb gag, and that he's a vampire. Like Ulysses S. Grant is a vampire who talks with the Transylvania accent.
I thought there was going to be more to that scene. I forgot. They just run away, as I would, rightfully so.
This is quite a kind of Family Guy episode. They have a lot of cutaways to stuff.
So do we think it's an animatronic Grant, or is that the real guy and he just has glowing eyes and is a vampire?
I think Grant is a vampire. I think he really is.
I don't think it's a college student playing the role during the summer. Maybe. You have to sleep in a grave. Be comfortable with that.
That's a great idea. Instead of like dressing as Elmo and asking for $5 to take pictures, you dress as Grant at Grant's tomb and then hide and then pop out.
That would be so great. Oh, man. So much better than those scuzzy Elmos.
Disgusting.
Who dares disturb my slumber?
No, it's a reference to Critic. Don't you guys know?
Come on. It's the most popular show ever.
Don't tell the cops.
So Jay and Olivia go to Hayden Planetarium, who is seemingly putting on a show just for them, because their depictions are just up there on the screen, because I guess Jay and Olivia are both their own constellations as well.
Every cartoon has a scene in a planetarium. It's an easy little set piece.
You can make your constellation jokes here.
Though usually they do it for the one in L.A. that's in every movie that was just in La La Land. The observatory.
The Griffith Observatory?
There's
a hidden joke in here that, you know, there's constellation that looks like hers, the goddess. And the constellation looked like him is Kreplach the ogre.
The bald ogre.
Yeah.
The bald ogre. Why are they making fun of Kreplach? That's a real thing.
Oh, that's right.
Kreplach are delicious dumplings with meat, and then you put like mashed potatoes around them, and then you cook them, and they are fantastic.
Because if you don't know that, it sounds horrible.
I know. It's like the worst word for the best.
It's got
food.
Those guttural noises like Kreplach.
When they need a scary sound, they'll pull out something Jewish.
The act break is Woody Allen asking Jay if Olivia has a daughter. Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny how they let him work in movies for 20 more years?
It still is. Yeah. Like that. Oh, God. It's so gross. And you feel like you can think he seems to think the noose is tightening around him now with the recent exposure of other people, and then everybody just goes like, yeah, wait, why are we still working with these people? Why did we let this be an open secret? We'll see. I feel like European producers will always give him money to make stuff, though, I think.
So the second act opens with what I think is the last time they could sneak Dudley Moore, Arthur, Dudley Moore's Arthur into the show with little men. They're all very short, you see.
Look at this. I'm here with the Keebler elves.
Well, you seem awfully hostile. You should see a shrink.
Shrink! Oh, you think I'm funny? Do I amuse you? Do I make you laugh? I asked for two shots, but this is ridiculous. Oh, God, I'd kill myself.
That was
fun. Hey, look, it's Gary Coleman.
Here we go. So not the best Michael J. Fox, but he has he has like three words to say.
It's a parody, I guess, the recent Little Women with Winona Ryder, the then recent Little Women with Winona Ryder. It just happened, which that's one of my favorite versions of Little Women. I've never read the book, but unlike
but
Mo,
they weren't literally tiny.
No, it was a story of women growing up.
I thought it was a sci-fi tale. I'm returning my copy.
Why, I don't understand why this show has so many like non sequitur Dudley Moore insertions. Other than we've got a guy who can do a pretty good Dudley Moore. Let's find a way to use him.
That's all it is.
We mentioned in the last season that they built an entire segment of Pinky and the Brain just because Maurice LaMarche could do that Orson Welles voice. So people love exploiting Maurice LaMarche's talents in the 90s.
He is one of the most talented voice actors ever, I'd say.
He definitely is, I would say.
Also, I think there actually is a Louis May Alcott book called Little Men.
Oh, yeah, I think there was. That's right. That's right. I don't know
if there's any gunplay in it. Let's assume there is.
But it is about leprechauns.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's get into the stats here just so you know. Michael J. Fox and Joe Pesci are both 5'4". Gary Dudley Moore was 5'3", and Gary Coleman was 4'8", so he actually was shorter than them, but that's
inaccurate.
The joke. Yep. That's the joke.
They had to shoot him Hobbit style, like Gandalf.
So Alice is starting to catch wise to Jay's feelings for Olivia.
Look, Alice, I'd never want to hurt you, but I don't know what our relationship is. Are we friends or are we more?
We are employer and employee. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to leave with my dignity. Jay, is there a little man on the outside of this door?
Yes.
Oh.
I love her frustration.
Can that be line of the show?
I think let's give it to it. Really great delivery from Park overall.
Yeah, that's
leaving
amazing.
With some dignity by storming off into the men's room.
She could have said, am I in the men's room? Did I go into the men's room? Like, no. Is there a little man on the side of that door?
She didn't want to say, am I in the men's room? It's just immediately, she doesn't want to believe it.
And she could have said crap and like, oh, poo. Just, God, she's so... They're one of their best stars. They did amazing. The voice cast on this is just amazing in general.
It really is.
Yeah.
She was such a great hire. And yeah, that she – I guess I didn't realize – until they said it the second time was when I realized, oh, it's Olivia Newton-John name. That's the joke with her voice.
Yeah.
Another famous Aussie Drungo.
Oh, Drungo. Look it up, kids. It's real fun.
And then Doris Minson's feeling death's warm embrace, which in 9 months, Doris Grau will feel death's warm
but,
embrace.
But on a less tragic note, Duke had a history with Olivia.
I know that Olivia chick. She gave me the wildest night of my life. Then, when I woke up, she was gone. She didn't even stay to cuddle.
I'd never walk out on you.
Her teeth fall out.
I love
that. That wasn't very sexy, was it?
the way Duke shakes his head, just wide-eyed.
No.
Yeah. I mean, usually it's not funny when someone answers a rhetorical question like that, but the way he shakes his head of just like, no.
It's like, no, I'm scared to death.
I'm frightened.
But they love making Duke cry. They love making Charles Napier say the wussiest, weirdest things, and that him just say, didn't even stay to cuddle.
I know. I imagine literal Charles Napier saying that. It makes me happy.
Oh, it's beautiful.
All right, baby.
Stay tuned to Fox, where we can say boobies.
Are you hungry for a comedy sandwich? Try this, Home Improvement at a special time, 8, 7 Central. Then, from the producers of Home Improvement, Mom and the kids are moving in with Grandpa. And does he have his hands full? Edward Asner premieres in Thunder Alley. Then it's men versus the women in a race to build the perfect house with help from John Elway and Evander Holyfield.
Give me the donut.
I don't think so, Tim.
It's all new. A home improvement sandwich with Thunder Alley in the middle. Don't hold the laughs Wednesday.
So yeah, Olivia is showering in Jay's apartment. Jeremy's looking for her. Did they bone down? What happened here?
I'm guessing they went to Bone Town.
I think they did.
It took an all night trip to Bone Town.
Why would they be
like, unless they're like,
pop.
No, we both have to shower before.
Yes.
Yeah. I could see that.
Especially
role.
Jay.
I could see that role with Jay. Jay would need to clean some stuff up, I would think. But that I think it's an interesting turn that they definitely are saying she is a woman with experience, but I was glad they didn't really slut shame her too much. And it was more – I thought it was a good turn for Jeremy that Jeremy was like, the standard thing would be, you're going to break my sister's heart. Fuck you. And Stay's like, no, my sister's going to break your heart because she has very short relationships with men.
Yep.
She's very capricious, just like Andrew Lloyd Webber, right?
Yes, just like Andrew Lloyd Webber.
We're learning new words today. Yeah, there's a pretty long scene in this in which Jeremy finds Olivia at Jay's apartment, and Jay has to go sit down on the balcony, and it immediately starts raining.
Yes, and he's nude.
And he's nude. Yeah.
And then there's that whole come from a land down under joke.
Oh, yeah, she's singing down under.
Oh, right, in the shower.
And Jay offers Jeremy a Vegemite sandwich.
Vegemite sandwich. God.
They're running out of – like I think they didn't mention Vegemite yet in the critic. Mm. Maybe.
I love the voice and design of the Iowa guy, like fat naked guy on the roof there. New York City. Oh, it's beautiful.
So Olivia has a heart-to-heart with Jay.
Jay, do you know why you're different from every man I've been with?
Is it my vestigial bosom?
No, it's because deep down you're the most vulnerable man I've ever met. You're sweet, you're unpretentious, you're like a big koala bear.
He turns into a koala?
I hate Qantas.
Now, Jay, I want our relationship to be built on trust. So I'm going to tell you about every man I've ever been with. Starting in high school, there was Cato, who lived in the guest house. Warren Beatty, when he was good. Pete Best, he was the worst. Mickey Dolenz, Peter Tork, Peter Tosh and Mickey Rourke. Then this year there was Larry Bud Melman, and he was the best. Until you.
Well, since we're cleaning the slate, I'll confess my many sordid and tawdry affairs. Woo! So good to come clean.
Yeah, I think the joke is less slut-shaming Olivia, more that Jay has not had a lot of sexual experience. Yeah.
No,
but sleeping with Larry Bud Melman, we'll get to Larry Bud Melman in a second, I think.
Yeah, but so Warren Beatty in high school? I mean,
yeah.
Well, yeah, wait a minute. Well, But the Jay took only a second to say it, which really – we know he's been with four women on the show. He's been with Ardith. He's been with Humphrey. He's been with the Misery Woman and the star of Kiss of Death. So he's had the show, he has had four consensual sexual relationships with women that he would list there. Wait. Though two of them don't have names.
True. So they might as well not even exist.
What was his reaction when she said that she slept with Duke?
Wait a minute. She should have said Duke Phillips in there.
Maybe he was just so overwhelmed as she was listing everyone in the world.
That would have been a good joke. Yeah, they really missed something there. They show him shaving during it. That's how long it takes.
We have to tackle these references, though. So this is the first time I got the I Hate Qantas joke.
I never got it until now either.
I never saw these commercials. They were commercials for the Qantas airline, which still exists. And there were a campaign in the 80s in which a koala is very mad that Qantas is bringing people to Australia.
It
talks just like Jay does in that brief morph into a koala. Let's hear it.
I hate Qantas, not for selling the South Pacific round trip from California for $1,100. Not because they take you to Tahiti and the Great Barrier Reef and New Zealand. I hate Qantas because their crummy deal also brings you to Sydney and me, all for $1,100. Give me a break, Qantas.
If you like koalas dressed up like things, then I've got some commercials for you.
So why does the koala have an American accent?
I don't know.
Like a sad American accent. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, you're going to come to Sydney where I live. Like, no way, you don't sound like a native.
I'm agoraphobic.
Also, I like that Jay is continuing to eat the leaf and hate Qantas yes. after he turns away from being a koala.
He just naturally eats leaves in his apartment all the time. When you see him as a koala, you're like, well, for me, I was like, okay, I guess I can see why she'd find him attractive then.
He is sort of koala-like.
But yeah, all those guys, she was Warren Beatty when he was good. That's what people would just say about him then, of like, Warren Beatty used to be in Good Stuff. Now, even then, it was like, Warren Beatty will work on one movie for 5 to 10 years and then put it out and nobody gives a shit. Like he did that with Town and Country. Remember that crap? And then he his most recent one was him in a Aviator film.
The Howard Hughes
His
one.
Howard Hughes yeah. film, except like – well, this will pick up where the Aviator left off when he's older and more racist and crazy, and I'll be him then, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, if she was in high school, that means, you know, maybe we're looking at late 70s or something, so that's some primo baiting.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But also, if this podcast exists to do anything, it should be to explain who Larry Bud Melman is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You don't want to hit Pete Best, though?
Pete Best, the secret Beatle, if you will.
The original drummer of the Beatles, who they fired him. Mickey Dolenz and Peter Tork from Monkees.
More culturally important, though, is Larry Bud Melman.
That's true. But Peter Tosh, the reggae star, Mickey Rourke before he completely fucked up his face, but it was already pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Larry Bud Melman.
Yes. So he is a his real name is Calvert DeForest. He is or was a David Letterman show character, just a weird old man. If he existed today, he would be like in a Tim and Eric thing. That's basically the casting for him.
Totally.
True.
And he was a very, very gay man also behind the scenes. So Olivia really flipped him there, you know?
Yeah, what the
heck?
He's
adorable, though. He's like Hans Molman for real.
He is a real Hans Molman. So I have a clip to play that is just a brief bit of a sketch with him and David Letterman. Please look up David Letterman sketches. They're so good, especially when he brings weirdos like this on the show.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, here to help us out with our little demonstration is Mr. Average American.
It's Larry Bud Melman.
Hey, when's that funny video show on?
Okay. Our country is in grave danger. So when your census form arrives in the mail, it's your chance to be a responsible citizen.
I won! I'm a millionaire! I'm filthy! Stinky rich!
The census is not a sweepstakes. All you win is the satisfaction of helping your country.
Yeah, that's Larry Bud Melman. And actually, when Letterman went to CBS, that guy could not appear as Larry Bud Melman. That was a character that belonged to the NBC show. So he had to show up as Calvert DeForest, his real name.
Oh.
Yeah. Couldn't think of a new character to be? Barry Ludd Melman?
They could have made a better name than – I mean, Calvert DeForest is still kind of a weird name. Who do you know that's named Calvert?
Maybe he's like, I want to be – well, he embraced fame so much. Like he was one of several people like, well, they got famous on Letterman and then they started doing commercials beyond Letterman and they'd appear on MTV and all. The same thing happened to the nerd from American Splendor.
I think it's like he's sort of like the male version of the Where's the Beef lady, only he got to live a lot longer.
Yeah, actually, you know, I take it back. He looks like Hans Molman, but if you put Hans Molman, like a whole bunch of coffee into Hans Molman, he's usually a little more energetic. That's the most energetic I've ever heard him, but yeah, he was usually just sort of,
and he flubbed his first line. He was asking, when does the America's Funniest Videos show come on? Yes.
And you can just see the smile on Letterman's face in that sketch. He's like, this is going to be tough. I have to wait for this guy to say his lines and hope he does it right. I always loved when you'd see him on Letterman. And you'd be like, oh, I'm in for a treat. Bud Melman showed up. And then that was when you learned of, mortality. And like, oh, yeah, he won't live forever. And that's happened more on Conan. He had like three different old guys on his show. You're all going to die.
I love Carl Oldie Olson.
Yeah, he was the best. Carl
Oldie
Olson.
He was extremely old.
And Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda,
yeah.
Who stuck around quite a while.
It was so sad when the Abe Vigoda life or death tracker finally ticked over from live to dead.
Mm. Then I also like that the only one that Jay screams in her face twice and she still wants to kiss him. It's like, I don't know. I think I'd stop then. But that only when she becomes Tony Curtis, that's when he kisses her.
He's very happy that she called him Spartacus.
Call me Spartacus.
It's more like, well, I can't scream again, so I'll just take this.
Yes. And that, yeah, that Jeremy pointing out that he's like, that, oh, this is your attraction to me you're working through here. I also, yeah. I loved his delivery of, that hardly seems fair.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, out on the balcony, the second Jeremy goes out there, the rain stops. It's sunny. There's birds. And like, I love the, you know, just like, oh yeah, it's sunny, the birds. That's the end of the joke. And then they come back later and it's like, there's two twins in bikinis hanging out with him now. Yes. And they're having drinks.
Oh, that was great.
I just love the scene of Jeremy has his arms outstretched. It will be the cover art for this episode. So Jay's like shivering in a towel. Jeremy has his arms outstretched and there are birds landing on him in the
He's
sunlight.
He's just in a Christ pose. Yeah.
The beautiful Roselli twins are there. And apparently they've come up with this theory that this is all about Jay's latent homosexuality.
Mm. Which is partially true.
It's partially true. But then, well, speaking of gay icons, Ricky Lake enters the picture at this point. Like, I love Ricky Lake. She was, I believe she was discovered by John Waters. I think that was her first film, wasn't it? Hairspray, I think. That she was the lead in Hairspray. And then she didn't get cast in a ton of stuff after that, but she lost some of her weight. She's still a large and in charge lady who then was just one of many popular daytime talk show hosts with the Freak Parade of
stuff.
Yeah,
I watched a lot of Ricky Lake as a kid. I never saw the Men Are Scum Week that Penny saw.
It was always on after school for some reason. Mm. So it was really easy to see.
For me, it was like a Ricky Lake, Jenny Jones sandwich every time I was homesick from school. Like,
Jenny Jones, that's the one where somebody murdered another guy.
Yeah, it's like the secret gay crush that will eventually lead to murder show.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah, please look it up. It's terrifying.
But Ricky Lake was on for years and just as Ricky Lake. Then in the 2000s, she got The Ricky Lake Show as a comeback. But now she doesn't have any show. But she was a huge hit at the time. I just loved her. And I wonder if she was the first choice or if they were like, well, who can we get out of that? Oh, Sally Jesse said no. Okay, get Ricky Lake.
There were maybe 20 choices available at this point in history.
But that – it's weird that I love the animation of how Alice realizing she loves Jay of the Jack in the Box coming out. It's animated and drawn different out of the house style. I really
like it. It's very cute.
Yeah.
It's very cute. So Alice goes to Doris, who was with Jay during the worst times of his life, including when his liposuction backfired.
Doris, you know Jay pretty well, don't you?
Hey, I was there for him when his liposuction backfired.
All the fat goes into his head.
He went to Rio and was the hit of the carnival.
Ole, 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 feeling hot, hot, hot.
So one, it's John Lovett singing, so I had to capture it. And two, the animation is really good on his giant, like, carnival head.
Can we assume this happened sometime during his year-long liposuction session?
The animation setup looked exactly the same, too. I wonder if they just reused that drawing.
Lots of things happened they didn't show us during that year-long period.
It's, again, like, how could Alice, like, oh, yeah, he had a giant head full of fat once in Dance in Rio. I love this man.
I mean, there are many things about Jay that should have turned her off up to now.
I would say eating a dead fish in front of them. And by that I mean an uncooked fish. I guess we all eat dead fish all the time.
Unscaled, unboned.
Yes.
Head still on.
Taken out of a newspaper. Unrefrigerated. Yeah,
at this point we kind of have to assume Alice is either extremely forgiving, extremely perverted, or has some sort of weird self-loathing thing. I'm like, I deserve this.
Well, in both her and Lady Hawk's case, it feels like a very nice guy narrative that they're all like, both of them have been with tons of hot dudes who treat them poorly. Yeah. So they should get with a guy who treat them nice. Except Jay is like a shitty dude a lot of the time. Yeah.
Jay immediately he immediately sexually harasses Olivia out loud.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Again, a Simpsons did a thing. He gets tricked by his brain just like Homer did. It was the same
move up and
down again for the brain thing. And I also did love Doris sending a nude photo to Duke.
The animation on that is great of him like grasping his chest.
My pills.
There's kind of some references there, though.
Oh, really?
Well, it was a Marilyn Monroe pose, wasn't it?
The background, the red velvety background, was kind of like Marilyn Monroe's nude photos. Mm-hmm. The pose is sort of like the famous Rita Hayworth pose.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
So, yeah.
That was
tying it all
spicy.
Together.
Yes, yeah. But his the animation on him grabbing his chest and asking for his pills. I wonder if that was related to his Duke Phillips disease, that it causes a flare up of Duke Phillips disease.
Yeah. He's got that liquid in his eye stat.
Yeah, I know. He's like, I need it sooner than every 4 hours. Which again, remember this: every time you see Duke, every 4 hours he gets 8 ounces directly into his eye.
And every time you see Doris, every 30 seconds she has a hot steamy fantasy about Duke.
That's right.
In the middle of scenes she's in, she's thinking about fucking Duke.
They dropped this. Doris never talked about her love of Duke again.
No. Yeah.
And then we get a cameo from Fox TV friend.
Before we go into that, I just want to say that there was like this moment of cognitive dissonance with me when it went from like sending nudes to like Duke is opening a letter. Like, oh, that's right. People used to do that with mail.
Yes. Yeah.
When you send nudes, it is in a physical form with a Polaroid.
We didn't have smartphones in 95. Even I forgot that.
There were no DMs to slide into. Unfortunately, you had to slide into someone's house or slide photos under their door. Yeah, so yeah, Queen Latifah shows up from Fox's Living Single in a 90s kind of world. I'm glad I've got my girls. That's all I got to say.
Oh, that's – I was
– I watched all of Living Single inexplicably. What did a 12-year-old white boy have to do with any of this? I don't know, but it was funny.
No, it was a fine show. Though this joke is funnier now because of how – like, I mean, she can live as openly as she wants to, but – Queen Latifah is a lesbian. We all know this.
Are you
this
outing Queen Latifah on Talking Simpsons exclusives?
There have been 800 jokes about her being a lesbian that she just like.
But she literally says, you know, first Alice, you know, confesses her love and Olivia confesses her love and then Queen Latifah comes in. And what does she say literally?
Mm-hmm.
Jay, I've got to be straight with you.
I gotta be straight.
But I mean, ultimately,
wow.
I think we know her best from Taxi, the great Jimmy Fallon vehicle. It's literally a Jimmy Fallon vehicle.
I'm sorry. Oscar nominee Queen.
Yes, I was going to say, she's Oscar nominee as Big Mama
in
Chicago.
In Chicago.
She is
so
great.
Don't ever bring up Taxi again.
You be good to Mama, she'll be good to you.
We get one scene with Franklin, and it's very self-indulgent because it's mostly...
It's pointless.
It is truly pointless.
It's beautiful. I'm saying it's self-indulgent for this show because there's not a lot of dialogue, but I captured the whole thing, and I will play it because it is a spot-on Popeye parody. So Franklin's talking about how he courted Eleanor.
Dad, two women are in love with me, and I don't know which one I love.
Oh, that's a tough one. I went through some similar travails over your mother.
One side, you little squirt. I'll have this dance.
Oh, fresh! Help! Franklin, help!
Down some
buy booze.
Speaking of going off house style.
I punch like a comet, then drink till I vomit. I'm Franklin the Sailor Man.
Great job, Gary Graham. I love that. Sorry, Michael.
Sorry, I didn't realize it wasn't over. But speaking of going off house style, good Lord, this is like
– beautiful.
You must have spent like your animation budget for the rest of the season on
this. I feel like Rich Moore had a lot to do with this. If it's a specific animation parody, he is like a master.
It's so amazing. It's something they'd done once before where they kind of parody Wacky World, the classic Wacky World when he remembers his first date with Eleanor. I kind of wish they'd done it more of just every few episodes are like a Franklin memory is actually a parody of a classic animation style.
So much of it. It's just so right. Sort of the way the muted colors are, the way that people talk, but like there's not mouth syncing. It's just sort of implied that they're talking.
Dubbed after the fact.
Yeah, you know they had to give real special orders to Korea to be like, no. Don't animate the mouths. This will seem like a mistake, but don't animate the mouths because that's how in the classic Fleischer Popeye cartoons, they didn't really do a lip sync. It was pretty rare. Unless they were singing a song, lip sync didn't happen all that much in Fleischer stuff.
Right, and there is a Popeye connection to The Critic. Maurice LaMarche voiced Popeye in the 1987 awful series Popeye and Son.
Oh, my God.
That is the worst Popeye.
That's the one where they're like going around to clean up pollution?
Yes. I think so. There was no punching either. Not enough punching.
I think Pluto was a good guy in that one.
Yeah. No, he wasn't.
Wasn't he?
Popeye married Olive Oil, and they had a kid. And Pluto, he was Pluto in it, married married another woman, and they had a kid, and the kids were fighting, but they were still enemies.
Oh, and Poopy, Peepy, and Papy died at sea?
Yeah, they don't exist. Oh, Popeye has an actual son who now no longer exists either.
But who has his weird arms.
Yeah, yeah, he has weird arms.
Birth defects.
But he doesn't like spinach, so, what kind of...
Oh, God.
You've got conflict and drama right
there.
They're
cribbing from the Robin Williams movie now. Oh,
Battle of the Generations.
But Franklin's Popeye memory, I love it so much. Also, we just saw Garrett Graham get murdered by
we
I mean us in a group. And we watched the classic Chopping Mall, and he appears in it. It's a B-movie horror film.
Oh, Chopping Mall's great.
And he gets killed. He's on screen for about 3 minutes and then gets murdered.
Barely.
He's in a lot of schlocky 80s garbage that's fun to watch, like this and Bud the Chud and I think Manhattan Project 2.
And though this was an animation mistake I saw there. So Jay is in the study and told to imagine who he's in love with, do what Ricky Lake says, which is also Franklin and Penny are the same character at this point.
Yeah.
One drinks and the other doesn't, but they both have a childlike innocence. But
Penny probably imagines her memories as cartoons too.
Yeah.
That too.
So when Jay, though, goes into his fantasy, when he comes out, he is outdoors and there's like leaves in the behind him. It's the sound of being outdoors. So I don't know what happened there, but it's definitely an animation mistake. Like he had changed locations.
Maybe he was just fantasizing while he was walking to that location.
Yeah.
He blacked out.
He go on a vision quest? Maybe.
He is prone to having blackouts.
Well, let's hear Ricky Lake get inside Jay's head.
Who do I love?
Hi, I'm Ricky Lake. On today's show, we'll be looking at Jay Sherman and the people he loves.
Jay, I'm the first girl you kissed. Now I'm a militant lesbian and a professional woman golfer.
Ooh.
Hi, Jay. I'm the poster that got you through all those lonely nights in college.
I was on your wall too, you scum-sucking loser.
Smiley face.
Oh yeah, have a nice day.
Jay, I represent your ex-wife, Ardith. If you want her likeness to appear in this dream, it'll cost you $10,000.
Well, partner, it looks like we're on the road to Jay's bladder.
Yeah, I hear this cat has a pool-shaped kidney. Man, that's living. Grrr.
Baby, this is the queen. I dub thee my Earl of Ecstasy.
Queen Latifah?
Wait a minute. This isn't Denzel Washington's head.
Queen Latifah? Hello, I was shocked they didn't do it a third time, but...
The poster is a very famous Farrah Fawcett poster for those who don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I don't understand why Bob Hope and Bing Crosby are there at all.
I don't know.
Just filler. It's the
Road to Jay's Bladder movie we never saw.
I guess.
What does his bladder have to do with his fantasy about who he loves?
Maybe he's distracted because he has to pee. I don't know. But it's a nice touch that all the signs that are going behind them while they're like riding on a camel are the names of all the road movies. Road to Morocco, Road to Zanzibar, Road to Utopia.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But again, it was just Maurice is good at a Bob Hope impression, so he's going to do it. And I really don't like jokes about you were so ugly you turned me into a lesbian.
That was a very popular
angry butch lesbian.
That was a very popular 90s joke that we saw previously in this episode where every lesbian has been wronged by a man, so she turned to women. She can't just naturally like women. She has to be wronged first. It was in Seinfeld. It was in so many shows.
No lesbian would, even being a lesbian, has to deal with a man in some way. A man has to have done it. Like it was also a very... it was like an episode-long joke on on the Clerks animated series, if you recall, that every girl that Randall dated became a lesbian and that they were told, you made these lesbians look too butch by the executives.
They were very hairy.
I don't remember if they addressed it, but maybe they were attracted to Randall because he's so feminine. Maybe he didn't turn them. Maybe he was the deciding factor.
He's
a symptom.
I also like that Jay's fantasy is movies. Like when he realizes who he loves, it's Casablanca, probably one of his favorite films of all time.
And they use the music too really well. I love that
it's beautiful
detail.
And just like how Cyrus immediately falls in love after Alice leaves him, Olivia immediately falls in love with a hillbilly whose pants seem to be on backwards. So
I
she
love
finds
that
love.
Kid. He looks great.
Who, if this were filmed today, would almost certainly be played by Jack McBrayer.
It's true.
That is Jack McBrayer.
So at a screening of Quiz Show 2 with Mr. Sweaty Guy, Alice and Jay finally come to terms with each other.
Alice, I've got something to tell you. Something I should have said a long time ago. I love you.
Really?
I've been carrying this poem for years, saving it for when I finally met the woman of my dreams. Ahem! She's a super freak! Super freak! She's super freaky! Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't updated this since 11th grade. Oh, here. The woman I love will be my best friend. We'll make each other laugh, and I'll never be lonely again. Her name will be Alice, and she'll have a sweet southern accent. And I hope she'll love me, too.
Oh, Jay, you're the sweetest man who ever called me a super freak.
It's adorable.
That is a sweetie.
Mr. Sweaty Guy's drowning in the quiz show booth.
Good animation on that, too.
I like that music stand. That's why I left that in. Yeah. So, yeah, a very sweet ending. And actually, they have an original Jay in the Theater with Alice segment over the credits, which I don't think they would use again.
It made it even more special, I really
did. Yeah. And she tells the clerk to go away.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Again, why this would have had more impact if it had been the season finale. But it is a little weird that, like, I think that the joke with Fat Sweaty Guy in the background would be make a little more sense if it weren't just a movie and, like, they're ignoring him.
Yeah, that's true. It's really just them not watching a movie.
Yeah.
That's it. Quiz show, like The Fugitive, it was something that got referenced a ton for a couple of years and then everyone forgot about it. Quiz show's a perfectly fine film.
It's
a good movie. My favorite Redford ones that don't star him and aren't about how he's the greatest man that ever lived in every film he's in.
Yeah, I like this episode. I feel like they didn't completely earn the will they, won't they moment it was never an issue throughout the episodes up until this point. I just assumed Alice and Jay were a couple after that first episode she was introduced, but I guess not.
Also, if this were the first season, she would have gotten re-engaged to Cyrus while she was waiting.
That's true.
That would have been Park Overall's exit from the show.
Nothing good could happen to Jay in the first season.
That a woman lied to you, too, is usually the point of season one.
But what we didn't mention, though, is that Olivia was played by Morwenna Banks. She's a British comedian. She was actually on that bad season of SNL for four episodes.
Whoa.
She was just like, come on, we need people that are talented, that are funny.
She's a featured player.
Yeah.
Even at 12 when I watched it, I was smart enough to know, like, well, gee, who's Jay going to end up with? The guest starring character or the one who's in the credits? I don't know. And, some quick cleanup. When they drew the cast of Saturday Night Live and was making fun of them, Phil Hartman is in the center and is drawn normally. They had no jokes about Phil Hartman. It's just like, and also Phil Hartman, our friend.
I did see a Mike Myers in there, too.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I really like this. I really like this episode. Animation-wise was great. Mm-hmm. And it did a thing they had to. They set up in the season premiere, I may tell you why someday. Like, they were setting up later they'd get together, but they are not officially together in the first episode. And I was glad they didn't hold off on it and think, like, no, we should save this for season three, because they maybe had the idea of, like, there might not be a season three. Even halfway through season two, they're like, we got to speed this up, guys.
I don't know. I mean, with the whole, like, I don't really feel like they were teasing it out. I mean, because he says, like, oh, it's like a Sam and Diane, Harry and Sally.
Turner and Hooch.
Turner and Hooch. Tracy Hepburn, but we don't really see them fighting ever.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I mean, conflict is kind of the hallmark of those sort of, like, banter and so a little bit of strife, not like serious fights, but like, you know, witty banter. But we don't see them disagreeing, really.
That's true. I mean, Alice is really just there to soften Jay, make him more appealing. She doesn't have a lot to do on her own.
And she is a sitcom wife who is just there to comfort him. Pretty rare. Like, I think the only solo story she had, which then just got taken over by Duke, was her trying to find preschool for Penny. And other than that, she does not exist outside of Jay on the show, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Unless anyone has anything else to say, this has been Talking Critic. Thanks for listening and giving us your money. We really appreciate it. That's how the shows like this happen, and we love making them for all you folks out there. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I'm Bob Mackey, by the way. And my other podcast is Retronauts. Every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. We've been going on for 11 years now. It's a classic gaming podcast. I'm sure we've covered something you like, and if not, start liking video games. I mean, they're very popular. Everybody else.
Speaking of video games, if you like my voice and you want to hear it talk more about video games, well, I've got good news, because I'm on a weekly show called Vigigame Apocalypse. I should say I host that weekly show. It goes up every Friday on the LaserTime Network at vigigameapocalypse.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Wikiparas, AZ Not Easy.
And I am on a show every week as well. We're such super podcasting dorks. I'm on a show called 30-20-10 where we look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago that particular week, see what was going on in movies and music and pop culture and stuff like that. So really, it's just backing up the truck and letting me dump references on everyone and try to explain what the hell was going on. And I'm also on Twitter, mostly talking classic movies at Le Cine Nerd.
And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG. And, again, just like Bob, I thank you very much for supporting this Patreon and letting us do this full time. And Bob and I are already excitedly talking about what we're going to do after The Critic reaches its end. Ooh. We're getting there.
Big plans.
Yeah, we got some big plans. And also, you know, follow me on Twitter for updates from when all this stuff goes live. I'll usually tweet it out. And, you know, I guess just as a little request, if you guys could give us reviews on iTunes, those are always helpful, you know. Tell a friend how awesome this is, and they should sign up for Patreon too.
Mm-hmm. And friends, don't let friends share Patreon exclusive podcasts.
No,
that never happens.
You're dead to me.
And on that note, we'll see you next.
Seriously,
yes. On that note, we'll see you next week with Frankie and Ellie Get Lost. See you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.